And so I've kind of minded the birth gateway and also the death gateway. And there are so many similarities there. And so I will say that I'm very comfortable with the death process, and being in the acute setting, you do get to work that, you know. And I definitely had I think I was the right nurse for many of those patients during that time. Yeah. So
there's nothing more rewarding than helping someone pass. I saw that in his face and I said, what would you think if somebody else's dad flew them up here with a helicopter and put them on the top? Do you think they'd appreciate the view as much as you do? And he thought about that and he said, no, he wouldn't. Why? Because he didn't suffer to get here. Mm-hmm. Right? When you're given everything, you appreciate nothing. If you struggle and earn everything, I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah, it was such a powerful experience. And I think there are so many cultural shifts I feel like we could make in this country to deepen our relationships with our family, our friends, our community. And I feel like having birth traditions and death traditions are one of those cultural shifts that we might consider making.
All right. Welcome all to another edition of our awesome podcast. This is Nurse Stories with Dr. John McRae. I'm a nurse practitioner here in Idaho. I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Five Square Aesthetics. Five Square Aesthetics is making nurses' dreams come to reality by getting them into the industry. They'll provide you medical director services, discounted products, legal support, social media support, education, everything you need to get out of the bedside and into your dream job in aesthetics. So today I have a special guest with us. Her name is Jill Sharp. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
And Jill is a nurse. Well, tell us a little bit about your background, where you came from, how you grew up in nursing, that sort of thing.
Great. I'm local to Boise. I work as a registered nurse. My introduction to nursing was actually during COVID. I was a COVID grad, which was a really rough baptism into this field. So I was a COVID nurse right from the beginning. I worked in the inpatient setting for 3 years, and then I moved to the outpatient setting and have worked as a registered nurse care manager in a primary care clinic for the last 2 years.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, getting into it with COVID, because you don't know any better when you're new. You don't know what it was like before.
No.
The mask wearing and the infectious protocols and the what's real, what's not. Mandated vaccines, which you probably had to get one of those too. You know, a lot of controversial things happened during COVID.
Yeah, I had done an internship as a student nurse on a med-surg ward. And so I had experienced normal med-surg nursing as an apprentice. And so when COVID started happening, you know, instead of getting a graduation, I got a license issued by the state of Idaho under a state of emergency in March of 2020, and I hadn't even graduated yet.
Wow. And so you could practice as a nurse before you even graduated.
Yes, because they needed nurses. So I was in the system working as a nurse apprentice during the transition. And so I did get to experience some normalcy, and then just how things evolved over the next 2 years. And just, you know, every time you showed up for a shift,
something new,
you did not know if you were working the same as you were the day before or what new policy or procedure was being instituted. And it just, you know, things were just shifting and adjusting. We were adapting constantly.
Oh my gosh. So stressful.
Yeah, it was a lot.
So stressful. Did you get to a point where you were like, why am I doing this?
It was just, I don't know, morally fatiguing. Mm. You know, we all sort of operate on a set of values, or we should, you know, have a set of values, both as a human being and then as a nurse and, you know, whatever field you're in. So it became difficult to operate under a set of personal values and nursing values and then just sort of have that jaded so quickly. One of the things that I realized was that my passion for nursing really wasn't acute care and what happens at the bedside. It's really health promotion. And so it didn't take me long to realize I just, regardless of COVID, inpatient nursing just was not going to give me a sense of purpose, period.
Yeah.
So
it's rough because it's rough because you're treating them at their worst, and you really do get the worst of humanity when you're doing inpatient care. But I mean, there's some rewarding parts of it as well, but it's a drag.
It's really tough work. I mean, it is 12 hours of really grinding work. Everybody wears a pedometer these days, and I could walk 4 to 6 miles.
Wow.
In a 12-hour shift.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's a lot of rounding. You know, that's seeing a lot of people, you know, just pushing this computer around and doing assessments and making med passes and
physically exhausting and more importantly, mentally exhausting.
It's a lot of thinking. So the demographic that I serve too is also pretty unique, and there's a lot of geriatric patients. And so you're also just dealing with mostly older and pretty sick people. And then it's a small enough setting too, where you really get to know frequent flyers. Other nurses will know, you know, where you kind of see the same person over and over
again. Great. Mr. Sharp's here, whomever, right?
Yeah. And you're like, man, I wish I had the magic words to inspire this person to make the change that they need to make, but you just don't. And so, it's exhausting, very grinding work. My husband is a retired law enforcement officer, and we like to say cops and nurses have really weird jobs.
They do.
It's just a weird job.
It's just weird. And unless you're in it, you don't really understand it.
You can't.
You can't. Which is why this podcast is here, because we're going to tell some fun stories. Hopefully we'll have some fun stories to tell. Well, so you started off in bedside nursing, and then you weren't there long, obviously, and then you went to clinic work?
Yeah, I did about 2.5 years of bedside. And during that time, I worked med-surg, the telemetry ward in a step-down unit, and did some time in the ICU as well. And then I moved to primary care in July of 2022. Mm. And that was right before the Delta variant came. And so they immediately moved me back into the ICU.
You were almost down to the dragged you back in.
They told me they were sending me, and I said, okay, like a good person. And then I went into the little closet that I worked out of and sat down and cried. Mm-hmm. I did not want to go back. But I did my duty and came back down to my primary care clinic about 3 months later. So it was a long grind.
Yeah.
So
especially when you see the light at the end of the tunnel, which is primary care, a lot easier. There's some challenges there though.
Yeah, it has its unique set of challenges. I do like I manage a patient panel. So I have, you know, about 1,000 patients that I manage their care for. I work with a doctor. We have a team that we all work together. So you get to know people, and, you know, you do get to have an impact on people's lives if they are interested.
If they're interested. That's a big if.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big if. When I started my clinic, it was a wellness center. And straight out of school, 2017, day one, I started a wellness clinic. And I thought, I'm going to change people's lives. It's really hard to get people to change their habits. Really hard. Really hard. You can show them all the data in the world. You can say, hey, if you do this, this will happen. But not eating a donut or walking 10 minutes a day. I mean, just little goals. It's hard.
It's really, really difficult.
Yeah. It's frustratingly difficult.
Yeah. People need to really have the desire to take control of their life and their health. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, you know, they say you can't teach heart. Mm. You can't, you know, and sometimes I think, wow, you really can't teach health unless somebody is just driven to find the power within themselves to heal themselves, make themselves healthy. So I do continue to try to work that angle. It is my purpose in life. I want people to experience the things that I have experienced as a human and as a person who was once chronically ill. Mm. You know, so what brought me to nursing was my own chronic health issues. I dove deep into research and instituted an enormous amount of lifestyle changes and healed myself.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
And you probably did it through food.
Yes.
Right? Like food, we could spend the whole podcast on food. In fact, we were chit-chatting earlier today about food and the MTHFR gene. Did I say that right? Mm-hmm. For those of you that don't know, there is this gene that is ever present in our society, and 44% of people have it that does not let you break down folic acid. And what does the United States do? They put folic acid on everything. Everything. Why? It's a preservative. It makes grains last longer. So your rice, your wheat, all that stuff has folic acid on there. And so when you get bloaty after eating pasta and stuff like that, pretty good likelihood you might have this gene, right? Is that something you discovered that you had?
Yes, I have the mutation. Yep.
Gotcha.
I have a heterozygous mutation.
Wow.
So, yep.
So you just don't process folic acid. Now you have to eat organic grains and whatnot, right?
Yeah. I'm pretty paleo, actually. Mm-hmm. I find that helps me the most. So mostly grain-free.
Yeah. Whole Foods is where it's at. I mean, if you're ever wondering like what to eat or how to eat, and you just go to Whole Foods, clean Whole Foods diet, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
You'll be healthy. You'll look good. You'll feel good.
Yeah.
That works for most people. The processed stuff is what gets you.
Yeah.
Which is why Americans are the most obese country in the world.
Yeah.
This is interesting. Of all the wealthy countries, I just heard this yesterday, of all the wealthy countries in the world, which one does not have a problem with obesity?
I don't know which.
Japan.
Oh, wow.
4% of Japan is obese. And they liken it to their schools because in schools they eat literally steamed vegetables and rice and, mm-hmm. you know, really healthy food. And they went to children in an elementary school. They said, what's your favorite food? And the kids were saying like broccoli and kimchi and literally rice and all these foods that American children would be like, what? Broccoli? And they just program them young to enjoy these foods and they're a healthy society as a result. Anyways, I found that kind of interesting. Well, that journey led you to where you are today, right? So tell us about your new adventure that you just started.
I'm really excited. I'm starting a kind of like a lifestyle with a nursing health focus, life coaching for lack of a better word. And as part of my, my mission to educate people, help them learn about their health and empower them, I also started working with Five Square as a nurse injector. Mm. So I'll be doing, you know, health and beauty work as well. So I just want to create, powerful, confident people from the inside out.
There's your mantra right there. Do you have a name for your business?
Jill Sharp RN.
Love it.
I am my business.
You are your business. That's awesome. So you're going to be doing some coaching. You're going to be doing some injectables and making people feel better about themselves on the outside and the inside. And you know what's really interesting about that is, you know, I've been in the injectable space in the aesthetic space for, I don't know, almost 8 years now. And when somebody feels good about themselves and they're confident about themselves, their health changes. And my wife's a perfect example of this. And I don't mean to call you out, honey, but, you know, when she was in her late 30s, we started doing some aesthetic treatment. And then she started getting compliments. And the compliments made her want to go work out more and be a gym buff and get healthy and eat healthy. And when you do all those things, you look better. You feel better. Your health's better.
Yes. When people start commenting and you start getting that positive reinforcement, you know, like you've changed. What did you do? It does inspire you to do even more. It's a good thing. So I think some people were surprised that I decided to go to add injectables mm-hmm. to my list of services. You know, I'm a very natural mm-hmm. person myself. I've never worn makeup. I don't know how to fix hair. Mm. And so I think people who knew me thought, oh, you know, you're doing neuromodulator, you're doing neurotoxin. This doesn't seem like a good fit for you, but I think it's the perfect fit because the whole goal is to enhance natural beauty, you know, it's not to paralyze or change a person unless it's for the better, you know, increase that confidence and inspire them to start drinking more water, eating more whole foods, going for a walk every day, you know,
as simple as that.
Work their way into lifting weights, you know, whatever it is. So. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, you know, most of the, and society doesn't really know this, but most of the products that we inject in aesthetics are actually naturally derived, right? Neuromodulators, also fancy word for Botox or the tox line of products, come from bacteria. And it is a toxin. And toxin is not poison. Poisons kill cells. Toxins turn off brain signals. And that's all you're doing is you're just turning off a signal. And so it's as natural as you get. It comes from nature. Filler is made up of hyaluronic acids. Your body makes hyaluronic acid every day.
Right.
We're just using hyaluronic acid to deplete some volume that you may have lost. And then you have all the biostimulator fillers, biostimulators that will help you grow collagen and make you look natural. Aesthetics can be done in a very natural way. In fact, I would say 95% of what I do is very naturally driven. We're just tricking the body into healing itself.
Yeah.
You know, half the treatments we do. So I think it's right in line with what your goals are, you know, going into the wellness space, let's call it. So that's pretty cool. So, well, I hope you find your groove and you just seize the day. You're going to be really successful at
Thanks.
It. I'm super excited for you. Well, this podcast is called Nurse Stories. So let's talk about some of your past nurse stories. So why don't you tell us a story or two about the inpatient care? Like, what's a funny story that you had as an inpatient care?
Man, I have so many stories. I wouldn't even know where to start. I think, you know, back to this is just a really, really strange job. And you find out that people do really, really strange things to themselves and other people. I think I've had more touching stories than anything else.
Like
I've had
people touching themselves.
No. Like more heart to heart, heartfelt experiences than anything else. And so I think because of when I came into nursing, I definitely experienced more tragedy, more trauma, and more was there for people more than I experienced the, you know, the weird and the wrong. But just to share the strangest thing I've ever experienced, I was in the emergency department doing a rotation there. And a gentleman came in with a problem. And his problem was that he had gotten his penis stuck in a lotion bottle. And he was really discouraged because, you know, it was flaccid when it went in.
Got hard when
he
it was
got
in there.
An erection, and then he couldn't get it back out. And so even though, you know, he just trapped the blood supply in there. He worked for hours trying to cut that lotion bottle off. Literally, I think he said he had worked for 6 hours to try to get that lotion bottle off. So by the time he decided to come to the emergency department, that he already had necrotic tissue.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, myself and three other female providers, which was also very frustrating for him, had to use a cast cutter to cut it off. And then, you know, you got to follow up with urology and hope things still work.
Did you ever get...
Nope.
You never heard what happened?
No.
Oh,
I follow the rule. I'm pretty strict about following the rules, so I never check charts and see,
that's good for you.
You know, what happens. But, you know, if there's a lesson to be learned, it's like, do not put things up your butt that don't belong up your butt because it'll get lost up there. And don't put your penis in
places you don't want it to
places
go.
That, yeah, it doesn't work that way.
Well, it's funny. We usually have an up the butt segment, but I think that will work for this segment of the podcast. You know, people don't realize this, but if you maintain an erection for greater than 4 hours, it's a medical emergency.
It is. Priapism, right?
Yeah, priapism.
Yep. Priapism. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a good thing.
It's not a good thing. And if it goes longer than 4 hours and you don't fix it within 24 hours, you'll never have an erection again.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty sad thing. There's a drug out there called trazodone. I'm sure you've given many, 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 many doses of that in your career. Helps people sleep mostly is what it's used for now, just kind of somnolence. But one out of 2,000 or 3,000 people will get priapism from it. And I had a patient come in. I worked on the urology floor when I was a bedside nurse. And we had a patient come in who borrowed trazodone from a friend, got an erection, didn't know that that was a side effect, spent all night with an erection, next day came in to the emergency room with an erection. And, you know, by then the damage was done. They stented him and got the blood out of his penis, but he'll never have an erection again.
Yeah.
Sad.
So sad.
So sad. Because sex obviously isn't a very important part of life. So.
Yeah.
Tell us a touching story during COVID. I bet you've got a couple of those.
Yeah, I have many. I mean, the hardest part about COVID was that families could not be together. And so that was, you know, where a lot of my own personal, you know, moral fatigue, burnout, and my own personal trauma come from. But just having to be with your patient who is also a stranger who is suffering.
Lonely.
Lonely without their family. And so I don't know. I dealt with way too much of that. One in particular in the ICU on a person who was on, you know, terminal BiPAP. He was not intubated, wasn't a candidate for intubation, and was going to die.
Wow.
And his daughter was 12 years old. And his wife, they all got COVID at the same time. And even
was he on a BiPAP before COVID, or did COVID put him on a BiPAP?
Put him on the BiPAP. And so because even though he was dying, we had really strict parameters on how, like a timeline, your first symptom, your positive test, and then you had to wait X amount of days before you could come visit. Well, they hadn't met that window. And so, and that man literally could not move in the bed without
help
desatting. You know what I mean? Yeah. He couldn't talk without desatting. So I sat and held his hand.
Good for you.
As, and you know, and let him tell me his story as he died. Mm. You know, I held the phone up to people's ears so that their family could call in and say goodbye. You know, my own dad ended up intubated in the ICU, and gratefully, he was a patient at the hospital that I worked in. They gave me a leave of absence and actually let me be his nurse, basically. Mm-hmm. So
otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to.
I don't think he would have lived.
Well, he wouldn't have lived, but you wouldn't have been able to see him.
I would not have been able to see him, and I think the only reason he lived was because I was able to be there.
100%.
I mean, people need to be with their families, and I think that is, you know, reflecting on this, the way that we isolated people, you know, first because of shutdowns, and then in the hospital setting, people died alone. People, you know, families in nursing homes. The doctor that I work with believes that his own father died of loneliness.
Wow.
You know, so it's just so much tragedy coming out of this, and definitely really solidified and kind of radicalized me in some ways too, which I don't think is a bad thing.
No. No, I mean, you learn from your experiences, right?
Yeah.
Positive and negative. And sometimes you might change the way you operate your life as a result.
Yeah. I do like I worked as a midwife as well years ago. In the early 2000s, I actually helped with legislation in the state of Idaho to license direct entry midwives.
Oh, wow.
And then I worked at a freestanding birth center that was staffed by licensed midwives and then grew into a nurse midwifery practice. I think it might be a combined licensure practice now. And so I've kind of minded the birth gateway and also the death gateway. And there are so many similarities there. And so I will say that I'm very comfortable with the death process, and being in the acute setting, you do get to work that, you know, and I definitely I think I was the right nurse for many of those patients during that time. Yeah. So
there's nothing more rewarding than helping someone pass.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tear up thinking about it. But yeah, the most powerful stories I have are those situations where you, and it's a beautiful process. It's sad, obviously, but it's a, you know, letting, giving somebody permission to go is, and they need permission to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many times have you seen patients hold on until a family member shows up or until you say it's okay, right?
Yes. My grandfather was, he had to have surgery and he ended up getting a secondary infection that ultimately killed him. So we all, yeah. So we all gathered around him in the hospital, but he, that is exactly precisely what we experienced. He waited till we gathered as a family. He waited until we were surrounding him, holding his hands, and he waited until he was literally verbally given permission to go. And he went within seconds. And it was the most powerful.
I'm getting goosebumps.
Yeah, it was such a powerful experience. And I think if there are so many cultural shifts, I feel like we could make in this country to deepen our relationships with our family, our friends, our community. And I feel like having birth traditions and death traditions mm-hmm. are one of those cultural shifts that we might consider making. So
I think that's wise. I don't know if you know this, but we spend an awful lot of healthcare resources in the last month of someone's life. In fact, I read a study once, and this is several years old, so it might not be pertinent anymore. 1/3 of Medicaid dollars are spent in the last month of a person's life. So wow. Think about that. Think about Medicaid. It's a huge program,
yeah.
Right? 1/3 of it spent to help somebody die.
Yeah.
There's better ways of utilizing those resources. Like get these people. And what happens is families get scared. They take them to the hospital, and then they're stuck there for a month. Well, hospitals are $5,000, $7,000 a day. ICUs, $15,000, $20,000 a day, you know. Maybe we should have a better process in place. That's a cultural shift, to your point.
Yeah.
Right. There was a another study. Have you ever heard of the Harvard study? It's the longest running study on human beings ever.
Mm-mm.
It's been going on, I think, since the 30s. And I'm not an authoritarian on this. It's been going on since the 30s, so almost 100 years old. And they took Harvard men at the time. I think Harvard was a male-only school at the time. And they took the class that graduated that year, and they tracked them through their lives. And they gave them questionnaires, and they just wanted to see how these men evolved. And they had, some of those men became presidents, some of those men became chief justices, some of those men became derelict poor people. I mean, they had all walks of life represented in the sample. And then, you know, obviously the men started dying off, and they started following their families, and they're continuing the study to this day. But what they found was what the biggest determinant of lifespan was the community they lived in and the positivity of that community. If a man was married to a very caustic woman or they had a really rough relationship, they didn't live long. But if they were surrounded by friends and family and community and they were religious and they would go to church and, you know, they had a community and they were, you know, playing pinochle on the weekends and things of that nature, they lived 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what you're hoping to accomplish, right?
Yes. My husband, in the work that we do, we like to say your environment matters. Mm. And that's everything in your environment, the people that you're with, how you spend your time, you know, how you work out, where you work, how you work, if you get a sense of purpose from it, everything in your environment matters. So
100%.
Yeah, I think it's crucial. I think, too, when we think about where we're at in society, this theory of connectivity, how connected we are, we're really living in the most disconnected time. We have access to a ton of information.
All information.
All of the information. And I think a lot of times we have this mistaken belief that we're experts on a lot of things when we're experts on nothing. Mm-hmm. But we're really missing human connection, and we really need to improve our environment. So your relationships matter more than anything else. And I think that's why my husband and I are looking to help people transform themselves so that they can show up better for themselves, better for their family, you know, better for their spouse, better for their children, better for their community. So we want to build strong people. We want to build strong communities. We want to kind of bring back some of these traditions that we've lost and make people more resilient and tougher, for lack of a better word.
Suffering leads to greatness.
Adversity is where you experience growth. And we, if I've learned anything from being a nurse, is that people want to avoid pain. They want to avoid emotional pain. They want to avoid physical pain. But it is a crucial experience. You have to experience pain, and you have to experience adversity, and you have to look for the growth in those experiences.
Yeah, 100%. I was with my son once, and we were hiking, and we got to the top of this mountain. And it was arduous to get there. I mean, a lot of pain, right? You got packs on your back. It's hot, thirsty. You get top of the mountain, then you see this view, and the view is worth it, right? And we're absorbing this view, and you have the sense of accomplishment, like, holy smokes, I did this hard thing. And I saw that in his face, and I said, what would you think if somebody else's dad flew them up here with a helicopter and put them on the top? Do you think they'd appreciate the view as much as you do? And he thought about that, and he said, no, he wouldn't. Why? Because he didn't suffer to get here. Mm-hmm. Right. When you're given everything, you appreciate nothing. If you struggle and earn everything, you appreciate everything.
Yeah.
Right.
I tattooed the word on my body, earned. You know,
that's your motto.
It's my motto. I've earned everything that I have, everything that I will ever have. I will always be earning. And so I think that's the words matter, and those distinctions are important.
You want to know what my motto is? I've been saying this for years. A lot of suck now for less suck later.
Yeah. Right? That's the truth.
And I literally told myself that every day when I was going through nurse practitioner school, because it was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, it was PTSD. Ooh, it's coming back. And my wife would always say, just keep swimming. Because Nemo was a big thing back then, right?
Yeah.
And I just told myself, a lot of suck now for less suck later. A lot of suck now for less suck later. And the suck never goes away. Mm-hmm. And you don't want it to go away. Mm-hmm. Once it goes away, you wither away and you die.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the people that retire and sit on the couch and watch TV, they're not long in this world.
Yeah. So depending on the generation of patient that I have in the demographic that I work in, it is, you know, you'll see a 90-year-old that you call from the waiting area and they jump right up. Usually they will jump right up. And just as spry as you can imagine, come into the exam room.
Ready to go.
Versus a 65-year-old or a 70-year-old who just was raised different, mm-hmm. you know, went through, definitely had a different experience, you know, with their service and our country during that time. But they're a completely different type of man, because most often I deal with men, but just a different type of man. And it's really, so when I talk to a 90-year-old who jumps up out of his chair and walks in all spry, and I ask him, what's your secret? What's your secret? Every single time I have heard them say, it's always the same, never stop moving. And so, you know, it doesn't matter what life throws at you, good or bad, but you never stop moving. Once you sit in the recliner with a remote control and just start watching your shows every single day, it's over. It's over. So your environment matters, and how you exist in your environment matters. Never stop moving.
You know, it's interesting you say that. This was told to me once, and I don't know the validity of the statistic, but you know, my brain, you probably already figured that out. I remember all these weird statistics. What elective thing can you do in your life that will make you longer than anything else, that will let you live longer than anything else you've studied? And I'll give you a clue. It's not exercise.
I was going to say just going for a walk every day, but...
You're close. You're on the right track. It is something as trivial as that. Mm-hmm. But this one thing will make you live 9 years longer than someone who doesn't do it on average. It's gardening.
Oh, yeah, I can see it.
Gardening. Why? Well, think about what gardeners do. They're literally wake up in the morning before it gets too hot. They go out. They get grounded. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of research coming out with grounding now, right? I don't know if you know much about that, but you put your hands in the dirt. We have sweat glands on our hands, so it connects with us with Mother Earth. You get in the dirt. You're bending. You're stooping. You're moving. And then you're eating the fruits of your labors. Fresh tomatoes, fresh zucchini, fresh corn, you know, whole foods that you planted, you grew, you have purpose for, and that purpose equals longevity. Mm-hmm. And I look at my grandfather, who happens to be, I think he's turning 91 this year, he prolific gardener. I mean, all the time gardening, you know, acres of this stuff.
Yeah.
And you're getting vitamin D. I mean, it's just a wonderful thing to be doing, right?
Yeah.
Get your hands dirty. And so you need, to your point, you need a purpose. You need to never stop moving.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, well, cool. What other stories do you have? Anything else fun and exciting? This has been great.
Well, I mean, just a little bit about myself.
Yeah, please.
In my journey to, you know, just continue growing as a woman and as a human, I started training Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at 40 years old. I was never, ever an athlete. So I've been training now for 8 years. I'm a purple belt. I've competed at white belt and blue belt. I've never taken a gold medal, but I've taken bronze and silver.
Good for you.
And had more losses than I'd like to admit, but whatever, personal growth. So I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I train every single morning with a competitive team. So that's kind of my main form of exercise. I like to lift weights. When I'm at work, I get 2 15-minute breaks and I take them. I have a 1 mile route that I walk. So I get my.
Can you get that done at 15?
It's like I'm a sub 17 minute.
That's 4 minutes a mile or so, 4 minutes a mile. Or 4 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So
I, you know, I have the same struggle as everybody else does, which, you know, I have a full-time job. My husband and I own a business. We travel for work. We teach seminars. We teach classes out at the range. We do our online coaching. So I'm very, very busy. I have the same struggle everybody else does. How do I manage my time? How do I stay healthy? And you just fit it in when you can. So
discipline.
Yep. Very, very disciplined. And that's
discipline's hard.
It is.
I do ice baths every day.
Oh yeah.
And every day when I get in that ice bath, my brain is saying, do not do this. It's painful. You're going to hate it. Like, and you come up with every reason in the world not to do it. And then you do the horrible thing, and it is horrible. Uh-huh. And then you get out and you feel like $1 million for 3 hours.
It's so invigorating.
Do you do ice baths?
Yes. I do a cold shower after I train. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same thing, but it just...
Oh, it's torture.
It's difficult, but you do... Then this weird thing happens where you're anticipating it, even though you know it's going to suck, right? Mm-hmm. But you embrace the suck and you go for it because of the feeling that you get afterwards.
Get this dopamine hit for literally 2-3 hours.
Yeah.
And there's no better way of waking up in the morning.
I agree.
Like, you get cold. And there's some research out now, like hot, cold, shocking.
Yeah.
I don't have a sauna or anything like that. Maybe someday I will, but...
It's in the future.
That's an easy thing. I mean, it's 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, you're supposed to do it 11 minutes a week. 2 minutes. You get done with your shower. You're like, okay, you crank it to cold. Here we go. And you get in.
Yeah.
And my water in my house is 52 degrees, which is pretty chilly. Mm-hmm. But then I have the ice bath outside.
Yeah. For a while, there was a group of us going to the Boise River in the morning.
That's cold.
It's so cold.
For those of you that aren't in Idaho, the Boise River comes out of a dam and it comes out of the bottom of a dam. So it is 4 degrees. You know, or 30, excuse me, 4 degrees Celsius, 36, 40 degrees Fahrenheit. And that'd be a shock.
It's terrible.
That'd be a shock. You know, it doesn't get, it's cold like that year round.
Yeah.
Year round. It kind of feels good though when you float that river when it's 100 degrees out. But even then, you can't be in it for very long.
No.
You got to be on the inner tube with an adult beverage in your hand, right?
Right.
They don't allow you to do that anymore, I don't think.
No, you're not allowed to.
Unless you're bad.
Right.
So, well, keep up with your health journey. I can't wait. We'll have you come on after you get a little bit more success in your business and kind of see what you figured out and stuff like that. And I'm sure you'll have more stories. Do you have any success stories with anybody you've coached?
Oh, yeah. So one of the one of the gentlemen that we train with, actually, he decided to go ahead and sign on to our transformation program. Oh my gosh, he's completely changed. His wife approached my husband on, what is today? Oh, on Monday, and was telling him just like, thank you so much. He has never transformed like this.
Really?
He is actually setting himself goals. He said, I want to run a half marathon this summer. And this was a person who struggled and had tried everything. I love it when people say, I've tried everything and nothing works for me. Mm-hmm. You just have to keep trying till you find the right program, but you have to be disciplined on the program. He has been so incredibly disciplined on the program. So like the before and after pictures are shocking.
So he went from like a fluff ball
uh-huh.
to like a woman's man, like a manly man?
Leaned out. He's never been a runner. He just did his first 7-mile run. That's significant.
I couldn't run 7 miles.
No. I mean, it's been profound and it happened very quickly. But
well, that's rewarding.
Yeah. But it's all of the things. We ask our people to get up at, you know, 4:30 in the morning. And you start out.
You know they'll have time if they do that.
Yeah. And it's hard. Nobody else is up. That's early. You tell people that you get up at 4.
Go to bed at 8.
And they think you're weird. But we ask them to get up and to spend time reading, journaling, go for a walk. You know, so then you're having this, you're edifying, you're growing, you're taking information in. So that's important. You're reflecting. So you're up early. You're reading, you're journaling, and you do your cardio. Then you go through your workday. We have strength training in there. We have weekly meetings with our community. We do macro tracking and a specialized fitness program. And then I do the health, you know, the nursing health approach as well. Yeah. And then, you know, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks out, you look like a different person on the outside, but you're completely transformed, mindset and everything on the inside. And so that's where you start seeing people, you know, manage their stress better, manage their relationships better, you know, become a different person in their community. People start looking at them, you know, it's just like, when did you become a leader? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because those are the types of changes that we see. So
discipline leads to more discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're disciplined, that's the secret sauce.
Yeah.
You don't fail until you give up.
Right. It's true. We have one of the coaches that we work with. He says that he does not believe in motivation. He believes only in discipline. So he thinks that we're approaching things wrong if we're talking about, you know, motivational interviewing and what motivates you and things like that. He just, and I'm not sure I'm fully bought in on his philosophy, but I think the distinction matters. You don't form habits through motivation. You form habits through discipline. Mm-hmm. And then as you...
Motivation comes and goes. Discipline, it's on you.
It does.
There's no excuse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. You're talking me into joining your program.
Okay.
So maybe we'll talk after the podcast. So that's great. I'm all for some transformational stuff. So, well, cool. Well, we've been going for about an hour, I think. So, any last words or thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, this was great. Good conversation. Yeah. And
we'll definitely have you back in the future. I'd like to see how incorporating aesthetics into your business has helped people out.
Yeah.
So we've said this before, but I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. So
thank you.
Well, thanks Jill for coming on. We really appreciate it. Thanks to all of you for following us, and we'll follow Jill. Before we go, do you, if anybody's interested in finding out about you, where do they go?
Yeah. My website is jillsharprn.com.
Okay.
And then our partner site, our other business site is paulsharpcoaching.com.
Okay.
We're also on Instagram, jillsharprn and paulsharpcoaching.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for coming in. And if you're not already, go follow them, check them out, and see if there's something that they can help you with. So thanks again, Jill.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks all. That was great.
Cool.